Welcome, podcast listeners, to The Wellness Connection. My name is Karen Bell, your host, the occupational therapist and health and wellness coach, passionate about wellness, bringing quality living to everyday life. And we have Jared Forte, our producer.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is G Forte. I'm excited about this week's conversation. We have Dr. Santiago Nevarez. He's a naturopathic doctor and an acupuncturist. So we know we're going to have a lot of great insights and information coming from him. But, you know, of course, before we get into that, I have to check in with Karen and see what she's been doing on her wellness journey. What are some of the things that you've been taking part in since the last time we spoke?
Well, last week was really hectic, a really busy week. But part of my wellness journey that I was really passionate about is cutting that grass.
Did you cut it yourself or did you watch somebody get it? Okay.
I cut it myself. All right. I actually had planned to sit back and
so
watch.
So do you have a riding lawnmower or you got a pushing lawnmower?
I got a pushing lawnmower.
Okay.
It's called for weight control. Come on.
I'm just asking. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I watched my neighbors did a little, and I'm saying, should I have not? And I'm like, no, I am actually getting my exercise in.
So did you weed whack too? Did you
No, I tried that. I do have all the equipment, amazingly.
Oh, so you just got, your lawn is just low and sloppy.
I'm sort of feeling that somewhat because you know why? About a week and a half ago, I had some lawn maintenance people come over and actually spread weed and feed and the grass grower, you know, stuff. And actually, weeds are still like hanging around. Even mm-hmm. though I cut, I did an awesome, sweet job. Dandelion.
You got to get around. Yeah, you got to get in there. And then you got to get around those edges too. You want to have a, you know, don't be out there half-stepping now.
But it felt great.
It felt good. So you don't have any allergies around grass
or
anything like
that? No, thank goodness
I
don't. When I first moved back to Maryland, you know, recall, I lived in Florida for 20 years.
I didn't know you were down there that long.
Oh, yeah.
I knew you were down there. I didn't know you were down. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And so they always say the best place to live is Florida if you have any allergies. And that's true because growing up here in Maryland, I had allergies, and it was, I wouldn't say horrific, but it wasn't the best experience. I didn't have to medicate myself. But being a transient to Florida actually cleared all that up. And then coming back here, oh my goodness, it was like murderous. I mean, because, you know, I told you I used to run a lot, or, you know, do all my outdoor activities. So I had to sort of find my activities here in a new community or a new setting, meaning where we have four seasons. And I still like to run. So I used to be out running, but oh my goodness, talking about an attack. I had major attacks, major attacks. So it took about a year and a half for my body to sort of recover and adapt to the allergens here. So after that, now I'm awesome. I can hang out in the grass. I can lay in the grass.
You can cut the grass and all that.
I can cut the grass.
Sit out there and, well, maybe next time when you cut the grass, you can go ahead and get the weed whacker out too and go ahead on and finish the job.
Halt.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, awesome. Awesome. I'm glad that you got a chance to get out there and push that lawnmower.
So tell me about your wellness week.
Just walking. The weather's been so nice. Just being outside. I got a lot of sun and just being in the warmth and I just walking around town. So I get a lot of steps in after the winter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I probably walk at least an hour and a half every day. I haven't been like trying to go a specific distance or time it, but anywhere I've gone, I just say, well, I'll just walk. Even if it's going to take longer, I'll leave earlier and I'll walk. And just being out there and just being in the spring weather has been really big for me.
Yeah, I could see that because we've had a really irrational couple of months, I would say, because the weather, it's either cold and hot, then cold and freezing, and then hot.
Well, hopefully we're here. We're in spring now. We'll have a couple weeks of it before it turns all the way into summer. But I don't mind that either. The sun just makes me happy. So being around it, having the light shining on me, feeling it on my skin, I enjoy that.
Well, so. Jared, the sun's supposed to make you happy. Vitamin D?
Hey, yeah, whatever. Yeah, all those D vitamins, yeah, all that. That's been a big part of it for me. I'm enjoying just being outside. Wonderful. Ain't cut no grass or nothing, just being outside.
Being outside, hanging out.
All right. Well, sounds like we had we both had decent weeks. So when we come back, we'll meet our guest and get into some really great information.
Welcome back, podcast listeners. Today we have Dr. Santiago Navarez, naturopathic doctor and acupuncturist. And are we excited to have him here? Yes, we are. We've had a long road to try to get him here, and we have him here today. So we are excited about what he has to share with us today. A little bit more about him. He was born and raised in Puerto Rico. Earned a bachelor's degree in general biology with a focus of human physiology from the University of Puerto Rico. Earned a doctorate of naturopathic medicine and a master's of acupuncture degrees from National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. That was a mouthful. Let me say that one.
That was a mouthful. That is definitely a mouthful. Yeah.
So why don't you say a little bit about that, that degree in that you got from Portland.
Yeah. So, hello, everyone. Thanks, Karen, for having me here. So what is naturopathic medicine? What is that degree that took me 5 years to study that sounds so weird and so long, and it's kind of difficult to pronounce?
Right. It took you 5 years to study. It took Karen 5 minutes to say it.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, we need to work a little bit better on our branding, but anyway. Yeah, so what is naturopathic medicine? Well, the first 2 years of the school, you spend the same as any other medical school. Naturopathic doctors in several states like Portland, Arizona, Vermont, Washington State, and a few other states, we're considered primary care physicians. What does that mean? Is that whatever your primary care doctor does, we can do. In Portland, Oregon, I can prescribe medications. I can do minor surgery. I can do physical exams, do lab diagnosis, all those fun things that a medical doctor does. And the first 2 years, we spend the same as any other medical school. You get your biochemistry, you get your physiology, your anatomy, pharmacology, all those stuff. When we start diverging a little bit is in the next 2 to 3 years, where we spend more on the nutritional, on the lifestyle, on the philosophy, on acupuncture, and other modalities where we focus on treating the person, not the disease. And that is a little bit of a fancy way to say, like, we focus on treating you, what got you into the state of disease, because disease means out of ease. We focus on providing the body what it needs, understanding what are the obstacles of health, what are the things that we can work with helping you improve your overall health.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting choice as a career. Can you say a little bit about some before you decided to go into this path when you were younger? What led you into wanting to pursue a career along these lines?
So as growing up, my parents did not really like to take me to a medical appointment. Or medical doctors, because they felt like, oh, just take a few soups, take these teas, take these supplements, and you're going to be fine. Oh, a fever, that's okay. Right. Not worry that much.
Right.
Like, most of us knows when something's going really wrong with us and we need to go to the doctor. And then other times it's like, yeah, you got a cold. Like, yeah, you can take antibiotic or you can allow your body to heal and self-regulate, because that's what our bodies are designed to do. Our bodies are one of the most intricate and complicated machineries in the world, but they're always focused on one thing, and that is to heal and self-regulate, to live your better life. And if there's something going on that is stopping that process, you can be aware of that. You know that if you did not sleep well, you're going to be tired the next day. Mm-hmm. You know that if you got a cold, you should sleep more at home. You should not be stressed out. You should not be going out and interacting. You should not be eating as much food as you normally do.
So you eat less when you have a cold?
Yeah. Usually when a little kid gets sick and they go to the doctor, the doctor tells them, fluids is fine. They don't need to eat as much. They will not be as hungry. And just keep giving them fluid. Give them water, some electrolyte solution or something like that. And they will go over it in the next 2 or 3 days. What happens when you're an adult? You forget about those lessons.
Right.
You are sick. And then you say like, oh, I need to eat a lot because that will help me.
I'm going
to
eat me a beef stew.
I'm going to eat that beef, that mega beef stew with rice and all these. Like, no.
But interesting. I'm sorry, Dr. Navarez.
Yeah, go ahead.
Interesting. We grew up. We got to feed the cold. You got to feed the cold.
And that's what you're doing. You're feeding the cold and keeping it alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have found out there's so much research out there going out about the power of fasting, about the power of just not eating. Like, your body likes to focus on activity. And when you're sick, your body likes to focus on the liver, likes to focus on producing the components for the immune system. And when you're eating a lot when you're sick, you're causing those energies to divert into digestion, to divert into going to the digestive system, digesting the foods, and doing all of that stuff instead of resting, healing, and feeling better. Mm-hmm. And if, like, usually when you're sick, when you got a cold, you're not that hungry. You don't need to push it through. You can drink enough water and enough fluids, and you should be fine for 1 or 2 days. And side effect of that is that you might lose like 5 or 6 or 7 pounds. Right. You're going to gain it back when you start eating again.
Or not.
Keep it up.
And podcast listeners, keep in mind, you know, once we finish eating, we normally call that itis. And
right.
So your body does become overexerted from just trying to digest food. So what Dr. Navarez is sharing makes sound sense, mm-hmm. even without knowing the statistics. But continue.
Yeah, and
so growing up, your family was just not heavily into.
Yeah, they were not heavily into conventional medicines. Like, even when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with childhood asthma. They gave me an inhaler, and my dad said, "You're not gonna use this." They took me to a herbalist who gave me some supplements, some herbal stuff, and I never had to use inhaler, and I felt fine. Yeah, there are some statistics that said kids are going to go over their asthma by themselves. They're not going to have a lifelong thing. But I think that really created an impact in my family. And from then on, it's like, well, we'll try to go as most natural as we can. And then that made me like, oh, I like human health. I like going into nutrition. I like going to that stuff. So that made me decide, okay, I'm going to do biology and go to med school and then be someone like Mercola or like Dr. Oz or something like that.
Right. I can see that. Yeah. I can see you on TV.
Yeah.
Laying it down, letting people know what's up.
Yeah. Being like the medical doctor that does a lot of alternative medicine. But then when I was in undergrad, some family members got sick and they were suggested to get surgery and other stuff. And I was like, my parents said like, no. And they went to chiropractors, they went to herbalists, they went to nutritionists, and 6 months later, they were way better. And the same happened to me. I used to do judo in undergrad as part of my college team. And I hurt really bad my knee. And then they wanted to do some surgery because they saw some stuff in there.
Yeah, they wanted to get you back out there so you could throw some people over your hip again.
Yeah, like that. I dedicated to do that 4 days a week in my daily training at 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm glad I'm not in undergrad anymore. But I like sleep. I can wake up early thanks to that. But anyway, they wanted to do something for my ligaments in the knee, the ACL, which are some of the ligaments in the knee. And then I got acupuncture for a couple of months, and that pain went away. I haven't felt it since. And that also put me through the path of like, oh, I would like to do acupuncture. And then I found a program in the U.S., a mentor recommended me, that told me, oh, naturopathic medicine, oh, acupuncture combined. I'm going to do that. That looks fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
You discovered your journey naturally. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, listening to your how you grew up and the seeds your father actually planted in your thinking and in your habits actually directed you right to what you're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we all know some of these basic nature principles that are according to our bodies. We know when we eat a food that is not the best for us, we get gassy, we get bloaty, we get a little bit of constipation. But we like to do it for some reason because they taste so good.
Okay, we have to.
Yeah. Okay, we have to say.
So okay. Karen has some spaghetti, some suspect spaghetti.
Okay.
And she came in and is like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what's going on with me. I'm like, what did you eat?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I said, well, I thought I did pretty well because I had some, I'll share this with everyone. I had some spaghetti squash. I had grass-fed meat.
Okay.
And I chop up everything. I had garlic. I had onions. I love hot stuff, so jalapeno. That's what it was.
Uh-huh. That's why you are here burning up the scene. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
And I'm saying to myself, what in the world? Because I was conscientious, I thought, but maybe
right.
not.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, it's all good.
Okay. Well, we all know certain foods that are not in according to our bodies, and we know that we like them. They taste good, but we know that an hour and a half, 2 hours later, when they're starting to go through the small intestine, the colon, we start knowing like, oh, that wasn't the best. It's not that the food was bad. It's just maybe it wasn't optimal for you. Maybe you should start noticing a pattern of foods that you eat that might be triggering digestive stuff. And if they're triggering, and if you're eating in a constant enough basis, they might be triggering other stuff because for about 100 years, naturopathic doctors and other holistic practitioners have been saying health starts in the gut. And now in the past few years, we have been discovering all the stuff about the microbiome, about the bugs that live in our intestines, that they like certain, like they like living in a balanced environment. Mm-hmm. And it's not that there's good bugs and bad bugs, like they're trying to put it. It's just that there's some bugs, some bacteria that grow over another ones, and that causes something called dysbiosis. That means the environment is not as balanced as it should be. So you eat certain foods that feeds certain cultures, and if you eat enough of those foods, it can start producing certain inflammatory factors, or it might be causing some intestinal issues that may be leading to problems absorbing certain minerals and vitamins from your foods. Or you might not be eating foods that are rich in vitamins and minerals that are necessary for reactions in your body.
Very good point. I believe what I'm hearing is that with my diet, because you know I'm listening intensely, guys, and I'm telling you, I'm feeling this gas right now. But that possibly I had not actually eaten a jalapeno pepper in a couple of years. So I'm wondering if that's reacting to my system. I am serious.
Like, honestly, some of the spicy foods are really spicy, and I do not do spicy at all. Right. I cannot tolerate it. I say I'm a defective Hispanic because of that. I
wasn't going to make that comment, but since you brought it up, I was like, oh.
Yeah. No, I do not. I can't. Puerto Ricans are more fatty fried food. If there's something that you think you cannot fry it, as a Puerto Rican, they will be able to fry it. Which is not great for our overall health because it just increases. There's a lot of diabetes in Puerto Rico. But where was I going with this? You guys keep distracting me.
It's Karen. Karen is distracted by her. Karen is distracted, so she's distracting everybody.
Okay.
It's all about Karen's gut right now.
That actually gears me to some statistics that I found, Dr. Navarez, talking about race balance and how, because one of his focus is diabetes. Mm-hmm. He really is passionate about diabetes, diabetes type 1, diabetes type 2. And before he came into the studio, I wanted to know a little bit about, you know, what are the ratios? Where does diabetes affect what culture, what race the most? So I actually pulled that up, and it was interesting. The American Indian Alaskan Natives, men are like 14.9%, women are 15.3%. Mm-hmm. For Asians, 9% for men, 7.3% for women. Black non-Hispanics, men is 12.2, women are 13.2. For Hispanic men, 12.6%, for women, 11.7%, for white non-Hispanics. Men, 8%, women, 7%. So that was very interesting on statistics. And they also indicated on a statistical basis the effects of how it actually impacts our country and how fast it's growing in our country. You know, they estimate 84 million Americans have prediabetes, while 23 million have been diagnosed with type 2. So they're saying that people who are not aware, which are pre-diabetic, there are like 84 million of them. So, Dr. Santiago, can you talk a little bit about what your specialty is and how you can impact these numbers in our culture from an economical standpoint, because it affects our, you know, economy, mm-hmm. from, you know, hospital stays and a lot of the areas, the dimensions of our areas, psychosocially, you know, with our sex drive. It also affects us sensory, where you have with neuropathy. Mm-hmm. It also affects us physically. We sometimes lose limbs. It affects our kidneys. It increases heart disease, even strokes. So how, in your practice, you bring the wellness to this type of environment? And how do you educate the community and impact the community?
Okay. So, yeah, I have a personal history with diabetes in my family members that I have seen the down spiral of this condition from the moment you're diagnosed to the moment you have multiple medications and it's causing complications. And I think a good point to start is that diabetes has become an epidemic. It's on epidemic proportions in our population, in the US and in the world and in many industrialized countries. And we have found out, like, yeah, there's might be a genetic component to it, but it's more of an epigenetic, it's more of an environment component. Your genes have switches that turn on and off, and depending on your environment, on your diet, on your lifestyle, on different factors, you might be creating some of these genes that are more propensed for you to be experiencing diabetes. And first of all, I want to indicate that diabetes is not so much a problem. The problem is the complications that come from uncontrolled diabetes, uncontrolled blood sugar numbers. That is the big issue. That is, when you have uncontrolled blood sugar numbers, is that you get the vision problems, is that you get the neuropathy, you get the cardiac problems, you get the all the other conditions that come along with it.
No, may I ask you, Dr. Santiago,
yeah.
You were saying when the levels of your sugar, your your glucose levels increase, it impacts. So what does that look like in numbers? Like when you're testing, where on that spectrum do you start to feel like, oh, we have an issue, or, oh, we're beyond an issue with our glucose levels?
Okay. So, yeah, what you were saying, hemoglobin A1C is one of the tests that every doctor, every conventional doctor, it's done in medicine, is HbA1c, which basically it has a level that after 6.5, you're diagnosed with diabetes. It's just an average that it says that for the past 3 months, your blood sugar numbers have been over 126 millimeter deciliters. And if it's at 6.0, is that, okay, you have pre-diabetes, you need to take care, you need to start implementing lifestyle and dietary and do more exercise and do all of this stuff. When someone comes into my practice, they're usually already in diabetes, they're usually already in the multiple medications, and it's like they usually have like 7.0, 7.5, I have seen 10.5, and those numbers, like according to the standard of diabetes, it's a chronic progressive disease. And diabetes can be, I will not say reversed, but I will say more put into remission. Because if you change your diet, start moving, start sweating, start improving your stress, start sleeping better, those numbers go down. And I have seen HbA1c number from 10 going down to 6.5, going down to 6. And there's definitely a lot that you can do that is not just take the medication and I will see you in 3 months. It's like usually someone get diagnosed with diabetes in their 50s, 55, 60s, and they get the first medication, which is metformin. That lasts for 5, 6, 7 years, then it's no longer controlling the blood sugar numbers. And you get the second medication that lasts 5, 6, 7 years, then you get either a term medication or you get insulin injections. And that already puts you in the 70, 72, 75. And doctors don't really like to give insulin to older patients because it's difficult to manage, it's difficult to inject. Sometimes you over-inject or under-inject. But I'm not against medication. If you need it, you should be taking it because I want those blood sugar number control. But there is so much you can do. You should not be taking medication to cover over your lifestyle. You should be taking medication if you're following an enough of a healthy diet, if you're sleeping well, because lack of sleep has been related to problems with blood sugar regulation. You should be taking moving every day. You increase your heart rate a certain amount and that you're sweating even, that will be even better.
So what's the value of sweating?
Sweating. That is something that sometimes people find a little bit controversial, but I will say that at least it helps increase the temperature in the body, which in some of the more holistic episodes, it helps eliminate. And I am of the belief that, yeah, you eliminate certain toxicity from the skin. The skin is one of the biggest emunctories in the body. Emunctory, what it means is eliminatory organ. You can think of that your digestion, your intestine, your liver, your kidney, your lungs, your skin. Those are the organs that connect with the inside and the outside and help eliminate some of our toxic burden in the body.
Okay.
So as a society, we don't really like to sweat. Right. I say like you should try to get in a sauna if you're in a gym. And if not, try to exercise to increase that body temperature.
Yeah. I mean, I've run across some people with some controversial sweat. Mm-hmm. But you know, as long as you generally clean your sweat, isn't that controversial? You're just sweating nice, clean sweat.
Yeah. Yeah, nice, clean sweat.
Yeah, a nice, clean sweat, you know.
We need to sweat more as a society. Right. We like to live too much under the roof, on air conditioner. And,
right.
And not challenge our bodies enough to be on that changes in temperature that are actually healthy.
Right, yeah, easy street.
Yeah.
I see people, you know, even in the wintertime, who wrap up too early or like, and then when they go outside, they can't get warm because they can't deal with the natural temperature. They can't. Mm-hmm. So I try to expose myself to whatever is going on. I try to like acclimatize myself to the conditions, mm-hmm. not overdress when it's cold. And definitely, I don't mind sweating a little bit when it's hot outside. That's what's supposed to be going on.
And that's all depending on the individual person. Some people like to be more wrapped up in the winter. Other people don't. But it's good to be able to challenge your body a little bit so that, okay, it's really cold outside. How do they say this? It's like, okay, let's go into a sauna for a few minutes and let's sweat a little bit or let's exercise to increase our body's ability to eliminate some of these toxicants that are around in nature that we know. Okay.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Too much information. I'm all over the place. So if you don't center me, Karen, I will be speaking a lot because I'm really passionate about a lot of topics.
And we love it. I see the passion in his face. I mean, he's just rolling out this information and we love it. We want this information, especially when you're trying to make a lifestyle change. I like how you say, it's about a lifestyle change. It's not about just the medication. It's about how you're looking at your life in a bigger picture. And as an occupational therapist, I'm most definitely in support of that because that's what we try to integrate, how to live your life to the fullest, yet have some maybe questionable disabilities that are associated, but doesn't have to overrule your life. Mm-hmm. There are ways that we can work around this and actually enhance your life to its better wellness level.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you brought up that I really think is an important, having a medication or being on a medication is not a get out of jail free card. It's not magic.
No. Right? So, no, it is not.
So it's you know, it's supporting you, but you still, in order for it to really be effective and in order for you to really have a quality of life, you have to make the underlying changes in order to see a difference in it.
It's like, I always say that our conventional medical system, it's not the doctors, it's a system per se. It's designed to treat acute conditions. It's designed if you get in a car crash, if you break a bone, if you have an accident. It's fantastic and it has so many life-saving measures. But when you're in a chronic disease state, that is like, well, here's the medications, here maybe some dietary changes that you should do and some exercise and stuff. It like, those advice are not really covered by medical insurance. Those advice, our medical doctors are trained more in like saving your life when you're about to die and providing some support so that you don't die as fast, but so that you can thrive, so that you can change the outcome of a chronic disease that is progressing little by little. There is something else you can do. Whenever a patient comes into my office, I like to see four things that are doing well. And those four things are digestion, sleep, how you adapt to stress, and movement. If your digestion is not okay, if you're getting gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, it means that there is something else going on, because you're not, like I said before, you're not absorbing vitamins and minerals that you need for all the reactions in your body, or like your microbiome is not doing as well as it does, so it's producing inflammatory factors, which might be leading to some autoimmune condition or some chronic pain or some headaches or hormonal issues. If you're not sleeping well, in the last 5 years, the research has exploded about the immense benefits of sleep, not only for your memory, but for your immune system, for your cardiac health, for your psychological health. We have known that sleep is important for decades. We know the effects of lack of sleep, but sleep is one of the foundations of health. Then movement, if you move every day, I call it movement and not exercise, because exercise have gotten a bad rap. Yeah. And they say like, oh, you need to go to the gym for 1 hour and a half, and no one has time for that.
Right.
But like, if you say movement, you can move 10 minutes in the morning and try to increase your heart rate. You can stretch. There's a lot of movements like yoga, tai chi, qigong, other sorts of movements that are more light and you can do by yourself or even take less time during the day, which help increase the movement of the lymphatic system in the body, which help improve cardiovascular outcome, blood sugar regulation in your body, psychological health, and stress. Stress is not a big monster in the back of your head that is following you around. Stress is a process. Whenever you say stress, try to say, what am I stressing about? Am I stressing about a situation in my life right now? Am I stressing about my boss that is not being the best person in the world? Am I stressing about... What are you stressing about? It's an action, it's not a noun, it's not a monster behind you. And we need to understand that like this high stress response, this fight or flight response in our body has so many effects. Again, cardiovascular, immune, it suppresses our immune system. It affects our blood clotting processes. It affects our blood pressure. It affects it suppresses immune system. It affects our hormonal health and affects our thyroid, our sex hormones, our blood sugar. So many things at the same time that the chronic stress that we live in our society is affecting at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So the four things are digestion, sleep, movement, and managing stress.
Managing stress. Yeah.
So with the digestion, what are the signs of, like, what are the benchmarks that you look for when you say you're having proper or healthy digestion?
So I like to see someone that comes to me, like, the question that I ask always is, do you have any acid reflux? Do you get any gas, any bloating, constipation, diarrhea? I ask way too many questions about stool. People get scared about it. I warn them before they come to me.
Well, that's a recurring theme on this podcast. We've had a lot of that's come up a couple times, so we're okay with it.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So are you, like, straining way too much? Are you having a complete bowel movement, or is it, like, not really complete? Is it mostly liquid all the time? Like, there's a Bristol stool scale that you can look at scale online, and I like to see it between a 4 or 5. It just shows the shape of the different stools.
Okay. It's really nice. Yeah. It actually helps you. Anybody who's a visual. Is it nice though?
It's effective.
It's very effective. As a visual, I'm a visual learner. So as a visual learner, that's the way to go. So thank you, Dr. Santiago.
So this scale, you said there's a scale online you can look at?
Yeah, it's a scale. It's called the Bristol Stool Scale. Just put that in Google and you will get an image, a picture. And it goes, I think, from 1 to 10. And I like to see it in like around 4 or 5. So it's like a healthy shape of your stool.
So we'll put a link to that in the show notes so y'all can click through and see if you're getting them 4s and 5s. See if you're dropping, when you drop the 2s, when you drop a 2, is it a 4 or a 5? You dig?
Exactly. Okay. And
if it's not, call Dr. Santiago.
It's okay if it's not 1 or 2 days. The problem is when it's chronically like that, when you see a lot of undigested foods in your stool, that means that something is not happening right in either the stomach acid or the enzyme secreted by the small intestine. If it's too pellety, that instead of being complete, it's more in the form of pellets, it might be something more in the...
You might be a rabbit, Maybe you're a rabbit.
Maybe you're a rabbit. I don't like to say it like that. People get offended. But,
pellets, they're not actually a good bowel movement.
They're not a fantastic bowel movement. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. It's better to have a bowel movement. I like to see my people having 1 to 3 bowel movements a day. Preferably 3, but sometimes I ask people, I'm like, oh, I get 1 every other day or 1 every 3 days. And it's like, the colon is one of the biggest emunctories in the body. Again, like I said, the organs of elimination. If you're not having a bowel movement every day, that means there's some toxicity accumulating in the body. Like those microbiomes, those healthy bacteria bugs are not happy, and something is happening in there. And I would like to improve that. How do we improve that? We work on the diet, like providing more healthy diet, more healthy fiber in the diet, more vitamins and minerals, more stuff that is necessary. We might help with supplementation of bile, enzymes, stomach acid, or maybe some herbal medicine that helps all of that process. It's more of a holistic approach. It's more knowing what's happening in there. And sometimes it doesn't have to be too much with digestion. We know that, again, stress, adaptation, like I said, has a big effect on the digestive system. We know that in Chinese medicine, stress affects the stomach, affects the digestion.
Right, they're all interconnected.
Yeah.
Everything is connected, and that's something that Chinese medicine gave me, is looking at all of these intrinsic connections in the body, how the stomach affects the metabolism, affects the sexual energies, affects all of these stuff together. Is it something physical? Is it something emotional?
Right.
I have seen people that something holding on to their emotions is causing them to not have a bowel movement. That I have seen that happening. It's not all the time, but like addressing the emotional aspect sometimes is a key issue. Sometimes is the diet. Sometimes is the digestive processes. And I'm here to provide the support to see that the digestive system is doing well. If your digestion, your sleep, your movement, your stress are doing well, I get a really good outcome that you're going to be improving whatever condition you're having, be either diabetes, be immune system, migraines, asthma, whatever you're having.
Can you share with the podcast listeners how you, in your treatment intervention, how you treat all those aspects of the body?
Okay. So first of all, the most important thing when I'm treating a patient is taking a proper history. Sometimes I take an hour and a half to go over all the questions in my questionnaire to know what's happening in them, what is affecting them, knowing which is the center that we need to treat immediately. Is it the digestion? Is it the stress? Is it the endocrine, the hormonal system? What is happening here and where should we start? Because again, I focus on treating the person, not the disease. When someone comes into my office with, let's say, autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's, I'm going to do the same questions. I'm going to know, like, do we need to start in the digestive system because that's not working well? I'm not going to be giving them a herb or a supplement or a magic needle or a magic pill to heal their Hashimoto's in a month. It's a process. It takes a little bit of time. So I like to see their digestion working properly. After that, I like to address the stress factors, like to address the the adrenal glands that are the ones that produce a lot of our stress response, and knowing that they're working in a rhythm that they're supposed to be working. Because if you are under a lot of stress, stress suppresses the thyroid, which might be causing your hypothyroid symptoms. And again, I said Hashimoto's, but let's say asthma. So let's work with the digestion. Let's see if the digestion is working well. Let's see if the stress is working well. Let's see what are your goals. What do you want to do? Do you want to decrease the amount of medications you're taking during the day? Do you want to just live a better life, like have less asthma attacks during the day, and you're fine with that? I'm willing to meet the patients where they're at and seeing how I can help them the best.
Very good. So this is your journey with the wellness with your patients. It's all about them.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the patient. And I always say, I'm not a miracle doctor. You're the miracle doctor. You're the patient. Like, the patients are the best doctor for themselves. I'm here to provide the guidance, the strategies, sometimes the support with botanical medicine, with supplements, with other things that will allow your body to remove some of those obstacles of health and allow you to your body the chance that it can heal and self-regulate and thrive, which is what it's designed to do.
Right. So look, those four things are also can be described as the obstacles, right? Those if you are having a poor experience in those areas, those
If you're having a poor experience in those areas, for example, an obstacle of health is anything that is inhibiting your body from healing itself. So poor digestion can be an obstacle of health. But what leads to poor digestion, an obstacle of health of that will be like a bad diet, can be stress that is interrupting your digestion, can be a dysbiosis in your microbiome, in your gut bacteria. And obstacle of health can be a really stressful situation in your family. An obstacle of health can be maybe that you're being exposed to something in your environment, some environmental something that is triggering you to not be able to heal. There's many things that can be leading to problems that can be obstacles. And part of my job is identifying those obstacles and trying to guide you so that you can take them out of the way.
Dr. Santiago, can you share with us a win story where you had a client and they came in with an obstacle and yet they left with a hooray?
Okay. So there's quite a few of those.
Hooray for that.
I guess I will go with this one because it's the one that I discussed with your ad and is the closest one. So I had a 62-year-old male that came into clinic because he had erectile dysfunction. So it wasn't working. Like, he wanted to perform better than he was doing. He was 62. He felt like he should be doing better. But when he came to us, he was also diagnosed with diabetes for the past 6 years. He was relatively well-controlled. But the doctor, his primary doctor wanted to start like, okay, maybe we should start adding the second medication. And he already was in metformin. He already was in a cholesterol lipitor medication. He already was in a blood pressure medication. Because usually those medications go together. When you get diabetes, you're already having some blood pressure issues. You're having some cholesterol issues. Anyways, so he came to us. He only wanted like the magic herb, the magic needle,
right,
the magic thing
to get to it.
And
yeah, he wanted to get to it.
Like, he was using the blue pill, which is sildenafil Viagra, for treating that condition, but he did not like how he felt with it, so he wanted something more natural. And like, I said, like, that's not exactly what I do, but we can work so that, because I've seen the pattern, I have seen that pattern before. I have seen that you're already in your first medication, three medications, and you're going to a fourth, then in 5-7 years, you might be going into insulin or another medication. And I know, like, why don't we try to fix these underlying issues? This person was a business owner. He was under a lot of stress, because if you're a business owner, you're under a lot of stress. He was under a lot of stress, so the biggest obstacles for him were the diet. He was following a standard American diet, which, if you find the acronym of that, is the SAD diet, the SAD diet, just so you know, which is really big in processed carb, processed foods, all of these fun, fun, yummy, salty, sweet, and fatty stuff. Anyway, we said, like, I'm not going to make you become a vegan, vegetarian or anything like that, that dramatic, but let's work on your breakfast. Let's start working step by step, baby steps. Mm-hmm. So I like to see a good breakfast in people. He was skipping his breakfast and just having a cup of coffee in the morning. That's not healthy. I don't care who you are. You need to eat something in the morning. It's called a breakfast for some reason. It's a breaking the fast. It's the moment before you start your life in the morning. You should have something of fuel in the body. If not, you're going to be secreting a lot of cortisol to be able to compensate. Maybe some protein, fat, or fiber in the morning. So veggies with your scramble, some chia seed pudding, some coconut yogurt with some fruits, nuts, and berries.
No Captain Crunch.
Sorry. No.
No.
I don't care what it says in pancakes. That box.
No pancakes with extra syrup. And
you can have pancakes.
I said with extra syrup.
Okay, you can have butter instead of syrup. And then the pancakes, there's so many other flours that do not mess up your blood sugar levels. So you can have coconut flour pancakes, which taste amazing. Almond flour pancakes, which taste amazing.
Right.
And hazelnut flour pancakes. There are so many flours. It's just that the cheapest and most fast to find are the wheat flour pancakes that you just add water and you make.
Aunt Jemima and Miss Buttersworth.
Yep. Yeah. Those are $2. And again, they're not the cheapest options, but like the prices are decreasing because people, everything is managed by consumer demand. When more people want it, there's more production and the prices are decreasing. And I have found some awesome coconut flours for $5-$6, which it's reaching already the Aunt Jemima boxes, which are $3-$4.
That's cool. Right.
A couple more years and it will be better. So it's just having these alternatives that are less processed, less simple carbohydrates and more fiber, better for your intestine. So we work with breakfast, then let's start working with the dinner. Like the lunch, we're a little like that, but 1 month later, he was still having some ED.
Some of his performance issues.
He was having some of his performance issues, but he said, like, I'm having more energy during the day, I'm feeling better. So yeah, I may not heal you in a month, it's a process, but he was feeling better. He was like, okay, I'm gonna stick to this. So I provided some supplements that he might be needing because there are some medications that waste certain vitamins and minerals. So metformin, you should be having some B vitamins with your metformin if you're taking that medication. Some of the blood pressure medication, you should be having some mineral supplements because they waste certain minerals in the body. So we gave him some B vitamins. We gave him some mineral supplementation. And 2 or 3 months later, I said, like, we can start, like, I feel you're okay. We can see how your blood sugar numbers. So his numbers that were around 7 started decreasing to 6.4, which that puts him under diabetic. Yeah, he was still taking his medication. Mm-hmm. So that was still helping. But we saw that there's a pattern. He's decreasing. And at 3 months, he was already saying, like, I'm performing better.
Yeah, he's getting
I'm having a better erection. I'm having it's working better. That's so awesome. I wish I could keep following him, but the dude stopped coming because he got the trick and he knew how to start feeling better. Like, usually it takes a bit longer. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm feeling better now, I'm going to go back into my pattern. Like, you're diabetic and you change your diet, you change your laughter, you feel better. And then you go back into eating the same way that you were eating before. If you go back into being the same lifestyle that you were having before, it will come back.
Right.
I say, like, you're into remission, but if you go back into doing what you were doing before, it will come back. So again, diet has brought another bad connotation. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this for a month and then I'll be fine out of the woods.
Right.
It's more of a lifestyle change. It's more of a lifestyle adaptation, all of that, of those things combined. So yeah, he was feeling better at 3 months. He was performing better. And I feel like we can start removing some of this medication. I feel like pretty safe and start removing the cholesterol medication and then testing him out in 6 months and see how his cholesterol levels are doing. If they're improving their diet, if they're improving their lifestyle, they're sleeping better, having better stress. At a moment, he was having some problems sleeping. So, okay, let's work with botanical medicine and some sleep hygiene procedures to help you sleep better.
What are some of those? What's some sleep hygiene stuff?
So sleep hygiene stuff is at least the basic ones that I, the three basic ones that I provide is blue screens. So try to stop the use of screens, of computer screens or telephones or television 2 hours before going to bed. Why? The blue light that is produced by these electronics blocks the production of melatonin in your brain, which melatonin is the hormone that basically tells your body, okay, you should start putting yourself in a state of sleeping. So a lot of people that have issues with sleeping, I like, okay, let's work. Okay, you work a lot. It's your relaxed state. You don't really want to stop watching screens. Let's try putting a blue light filter in your computer, your TV. Maybe using a blue light filter glasses, which mm-hmm. are those...
The blue blockers.
The blue blockers that you sometimes see with people using. It's not optimal, but at least when you have them, you will start feeling more tired at night. You will go to bed earlier. You used to go at 12, you start going at 10, 30, 11, 10. I like seeing my people having 7 to 8 hours of good sleep. Falling asleep easier, staying asleep during the night, and waking up with energy. So something's like, yeah, blue light filters, then try to avoid caffeine 6 to 7 hours before, like, at least I say like 6 to 7 hours before going to bed. Depending on the person, some people say like, I drink a cup of coffee and I can go to bed immediately. That's not healthy, but if you can do it, yeah, fine. But
a lot of times though, they can get to sleep, but they're not getting into the deeper parts.
They're not getting into the deeper parts of sleep. And also, coffee has around, I think if my memory doesn't miss me, around 7 to 8 hour half life. So that means that half of the caffeine goes out by 7 hours and you still have the other half that need to take out. So if you have that caffeine going around, it might be having a problem with issues. So let's work with that. And with food, let's try to not eat 3 to 4 hours going to bed. So the blue light filter, the coffee, and the food, and usually people improve because people are eating like 7, 8 p.m. and then going to bed at 10, 11, and that's interrupting the process of sleeping. So,
or people are laying in bed eating.
Or people laying in bed eating. Yeah, you can do it a few times, and I'm not perfect. It has happened to me.
Chips, bag of chips. Game of Thrones and chips.
Oh my God, Game of Thrones. I haven't watched the last night episode.
Okay, no spoilers, no spoilers.
Okay, no spoilers. But yeah, a few times. The thing is, living in a lifestyle that is according to your body, like around 80% of the time, and then yeah, you have some freedom with the last 20%, and it's not living like this Buddhist monk lifestyle as best as you can, but it's trying to live according to your body, to your nature principles, knowing that you need to sleep 7 to 8 hours. You should eat in an 8-hour window during the day. What that means, like 8, 12, 4 or 5 p.m., and then having a mini fast every day where you don't need any snacking after 4 or 5 p.m. And if you have to eat something, make it water or make it a really thin broth or soup.
Yeah, eat some water, y'all.
Eat some water, yeah. And if you want to make your water sexy, you can add some citrus peels or some lime and make it taste a little bit better. But and moving everything. Our bodies want to move, but we're like, I just want to stay here watching TV, or mm-hmm. I have an 8-hour work day and I don't really want to stand up except going to the restroom. Like trying to stretch every 50, 55 minutes, stand up and stretch. That's a movement that will help you a lot and will help decrease so many things going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, movement is very effective in so many ways, even movement and laughter and how, you know, it increases your endorphins and actually motivate you to maybe want to do more. Mm-hmm. What are some of the tools and strategies that our listeners can start using right now to enhance their wellness journey?
If you want some stuff to enhance your wellness journey, so let's go again to those four basic things that I said. Let's go to digestion. How can you improve digestion? So a routine is key. Try to eat on a window at the same time every day. So try to eat, if your breakfast is 8, 12, 4 or 5 p.m., having that mini fast during the day will create some change. Have a breakfast. Have something in the morning that is either fat, fiber, or protein. Not too many carbs, like not the bagel with the coffee, please. I have said some stuff bad about coffee many times in here, but like 1 cup, 8 ounces in the morning is fine. The problem is the 20, 21 ounces in the morning that is a dessert masquerade as coffee.
Right.
That's not right.
Leave all the extra stuff out of it.
Yeah, having 6 times a coffee a day is not fantastic. There's so many things about it that is just not okay. But 1 cup is fine with some breakfast if you enjoy the taste.
Most people that drink coffee hate coffee so much that they have to put a bunch of stuff in it to drink it.
Yeah, it becomes like a lifestyle, like we talk about.
Yeah, and then coffee again is something, it's not a direct stimulant in the body. It tricks the body into producing more energy. So it tricks your adrenal glands into producing more cortisol. So you have more cortisol flowing around. It will increase your possibilities of weight gain. It will increase your stress during the day. It will disrupt your sleep, disrupt your digestion. So 1 cup of coffee is fine in the morning. Five, six a day, not great. Even if you can sleep well.
Right, because it's really acidic too.
It's also acidic to the stomach and...
Because it'll... other things. Yeah,
but
it'll make you feel a certain way if you have...
Yeah. So, there's that. Okay, so I... see, I go into so many divergences if you just let me keep talking.
So, we were looking for some tools for today. So, first was... I think that eating in that eight-hour window is really...
Yeah.
Setting that routine and... Eating in that window, regulating your, it impacts your digestion and also your sleep because you're not like still trying to digest while you sleep.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And like just try doing that routine for 30 days. I challenge you to do it if you're eating all over the place and you will lose some pounds. You will definitely lose some weight with that. I have seen it happen. It's just our body likes routine. Our body likes to know when it's going to eat, when it's going to process, when it's going to sleep. So try to eat in that 8 hour window. The second, sleep. The biggest impact to sleep will be try to avoid screens before going to bed. Try to sleep between 10 to 11 and wake up 6, 7 a.m. if that is your routine. And try to sleep at the same time and wake up at the same time. That will create so many impacts. Have a routine before going to bed and a routine when you wake up. Try to meditate in the morning. Like meditation, people think, oh, I need to sit down for an hour and meditate. No. 5 minutes sitting down on the floor with your legs crossed or stretch or in a chair and just close your eyes and breathe deeply. Try to breathe with your belly. That will decrease your amount of stress during the day. So I went a little bit for routine digestion, then I went with sleep, then I went with stress and movement. Like in that morning routine, you can add some stretching. It can be some basic stretching. Just follow these 10-minute workout videos that you see in YouTube or in many places. Try to do some basic yoga stretches if you're familiar with that. Tai Chi movements, Qigong. There's many things that you can increase in your morning to help you with your energy. So just in there, we address a few of the basic stuff. If we also want to increase overall those things, then I say have a breakfast. Like the research is coming out. It's saying like people who have breakfast have less incidence of a cardiac incident, like 30 or 40% decrease incident of cardiac incident. That's heart attack, CHF, stroke, all those stuff in their later years. Breakfast is important. So something that either has protein, fat, or fiber. Those are fruits, veggies, some sort of protein, meat, eggs. Yeah.
Very good. That's wonderful. That's a nice list for anyone to make an impact on their lifestyle, like Dr. Santiago said, in 30 days.
Yeah, this is a challenge, y'all. It's a challenge. So y'all let us know who's doing it, and we'll keep you, we can do it together.
Yeah, habits are powerful, but they take a little bit of time to develop. And like the first thing is be nice to yourself. Trying to do them as consistent as possible. There's some days that you will not, like you will just not feel like it. But if you keep with it for 20 days, let's say that you want to wake up at 6:30 a.m. because your day starts at 7 and you want to wake up 30 minutes early just to have those 30 minutes before your kids wake up and starts getting crazy or you have to run to work and you want to wake up 30 minutes early, try to do that for 20 days. Try to put your clock and you will see that after 20 days, you are already woke up at 6:20, 6:30 if you were falling asleep at a proper time. Your body likes rhythms. Your body likes routine.
So, Dr. Santiago, what's your vision?
My vision?
Yes.
There's many visions. Which vision?
We're going to say your vision for the community and how you can impact the community with your holistic approach.
So, I'm the doctor you come to see when you want more support, more strategies. I have a vision that in 10, 20, 30 years, people are starting to wake up. People are more aware of the impacts of lifestyle, of diet, of stress, of movement in their lifestyle. People know that these stuff are important. They're starting to listen to podcasts like this. Again, is moved by the consumer. People are requesting this information on there. I know that people are going to be living a healthier life. Like, we are getting the research out there that we know the impact of alternative therapies. We know that they're creating a change in all of these chronic diseases. And I know people are going to be more aware. I'm here to provide the information, the support, and the strategies. I'm here to let you know that your body is able to do astounding stuff if you just give it the chance.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Dr. Santiago Navarez, how can the community reach you?
Okay. So if you want to reach me, you can email me at baltimore@wshcare.org. That is baltimore@wshcare.org. Or my website is baltimore.wshc.org. You can reach the website, and anyone that listens to this podcast, I do a complimentary free discovery session. So you can go to my website and schedule it with me. It's just from me so that I can hear about your case and I can tell you how I will approach it and how I can help you, because I want you to know what I do and how I do it. And if you're interested, then we can develop a partnership as clients, and that can definitely work in the future. So, yeah, and then my clinic phone number is also 410-881-45342. And my website, I forgot I said it wrong, is baltimore.wshcare.org. I should know that by now.
That's we'll make sure we'll have links to this in the show notes.
Okay.
And you'll also be able to find resources regarding Dr. Santiago on the wellnessconnection.health.
Okay.
So
fantastic.
Awesome.
Right. So I want to thank the listeners, and I'm hoping this episode will find very powerful, great meaning and purpose to you as a tool and resource for you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating and review. It helps other people find the show. You can also connect with Dr. Santiago Navarez at thewellnessconnection.health, where we can design your wellness journey using tools and resources that enable, promote, facilitate, an ultimate meaningful health and wellness journey for you. My name is Karen Bell, and we have Jared Forte.
G Forte.
With the Hail Wellness at the Wellness Connection. Have a wellness week.
Thank you very much for having me, Karen and Jared, and have a fantastic day.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.